hours on end without needing help, and later on would have an interesting career which... But anyway, she remembered this one conversation on this day because it was strange. Not all the signals were messages. Some were instructions to towers. Some, as you operated your levers to follow the distant signal, made things happen in your own tower. Princess knew all about this. A lot of what travelled on the Grand Trunk was called the overhead. It was instructions to towers, reports, messages about messages, even chatter between operators, although this was strictly forbidden these days. It was all in code. It was very rare you got plain on the overhead. But now...
"There it goes again," she said. "It must be wrong. It's got no origin code and no address. It's overhead, but it's in plain."
On the other side of the tower, sitting in a seat facing the opposite direction because he was operating the upline, was Roger, who was 17 and already working for his Tower Master certificate. His hand didn't stop moving as he said,
"What did it say?"
"There was GNU, and I know that's a code, and then just a name. It was John Deerhart. Was it a..."
"You sent it on," said Grandad.
Grandad had been hunched in the corner, repairing a shutterbox in this cramped shed halfway up the tower. Grandad was the Tower Master and had been everywhere and knew everything. Everyone called him Grandad. He was 26. He was always doing something in the tower when she was working the line, even though there was always a boy in the other chair. She didn't work out why until later.
"Yes, because it was a G-code," said Princess.
"Then you did right. Don't worry about it."
"Yes, but I've sent that name before, several times, upline and downline, just a name, no message or anything."
She had a sense that something was wrong, but she went on.
"I know a U at the end means it has to be turned around at the end of the line, and an N means not logged."
This was showing off, but she'd spent hours reading the cipher book.
"So it's just a name going up and down all the time. Where's the sense in that?"
Something was really wrong. Roger was still working his line, but he was staring ahead with a thunderous expression. Then Grandad said,
"Very clever, Princess. You're dead right."
"Ha!" said Roger. "I'm sorry if I did something wrong," said the girl meekly. "I just thought it was strange. Who's John Deerhart?"
"He fell off a tower," said Grandad.
"Ha!"
said Roger, working his shutters as if he suddenly hated them.
"He's dead," said Princess.
"Well, some people say..." Roger began.
"Roger!"
snapped Grandad. It sounded like a warning.
"I know about sending home," said Princess, "and I know the souls of dead linesmen stay on the trunk."
"Who told you that?"
said Grandad. Princess was bright enough to know that someone would get into trouble if she was too specific.
"Oh, I just heard it," she said airily. "Somewhere."
"Someone was trying to scare you," said Grandad,
looking at Roger's reddening ears. It hadn't sounded scary to Princess. If you had to be dead, it seemed a lot better to spend your time flying between the towers than lying underground. But she was bright enough, too, to know when to drop a subject. It was Grandad who spoke next, after a long pause broken only by the squeaking of the new shutter bars. When he did speak, it was as if something was on his mind.
"We keep that name moving in the overhead," he said.
And it seemed to Princess that the wind in the shutter arrays above her blew more forlornly, and the everlasting clicking of the shutters grew more urgent.
"He'd never have wanted to go home. He was a real linesman. His name is in the code, in the wind in the rigging in the shutters. Haven't you ever heard the saying, 'A man's not dead while his name is still spoken?'"
Chapter 5. Lost in the Post, in which Stanley experiences the joy of sacks. Mr. Groat's ancestral fears. Horsefry is worried. Reach a guilt, a man of society. The stairway of letters. Mail slide. Mr. Lipvig sees it. Hoodwinked. The postman's walk. The hat. Stanley polished his pins. He did so with a look of beatific concentration, like a man dreaming with his eyes open. The collection sparkled on the folded strips of brown paper and the rolls of black felt that made up the landscape of the true pinhead's world. Beside him was his large desktop magnifying glass, and by his feet, a sack of miscellaneous pins bought last week from a retiring needlewoman. He was putting off the moment of opening it to savour it all the more. Of course, it'd almost certainly turn out to be